Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Earlier this month, sex workers across the country took to the streets calling for the reversal of the Stop Enabling Sex Trafficking Act. It was signed into law in April. 98 senators voted for the bill in the name of fighting sex trafficking. Democratic Senator Ron Wyden and Republican Senator Rand Paul were the only senators to vote against the bill. Only 25 out of 435 House members voted against the House version of the bill, which is called Fight Online Sex Trafficking Act. But rather than protect people who are trafficked, sex worker advocates say the law is pushing sex workers back onto the streets where they are vulnerable and forcing trafficking victims into the shadows. As a result of the law, Craigslist has shut down its personal ads section. Reddit has shut down several forums where sex workers connect with clients and each other, and Switter, a Twitter-like forum for sex workers, was shut down by the company that hosted it. For so many in the industry, crackdowns like this mean they end up with no other options but to seek work on the streets where they are exposed. So today we're going to talk about this bill, the reality for sex workers, and what regulations would look like that protect sex workers and trafficking victims. Today, we are joined by Tony Newman, Executive Director of St. James Infirmary, a peer-based health clinic run by and for sex workers. It's the only one in the country, and it's located here in San Francisco. Tony Newman is a former sex worker and author of I Rise, The Transformation of Tony Newman. And Tony joins us in studio. Hi, Tony. Thank you for coming in.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Kiara Rose is a sex worker, a writer, and an environmental activist, and Kiara joins us in studio. Hi, Kiara. Thank you for coming in.
I'm a human rights, environmental, and ecology.
You have a very long bio.
Yes.
Thank you. And we're joined by Carol Lee, co-founder of the Bay Area Sex Workers Advocacy Network and the Trafficking Policy Research Project. Carol is a former member of the San Francisco Mayor's Task Force on Sex Trafficking, and she joins us on the line from San Francisco.
I'm a member of the Sex Worker and Policy Impact Committee, of a current member of the Mayor's Trafficking Task Force.
Current member. All right. Thank you for that, Carol, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You know, I want to start off by asking you all a very basic question, because when I was doing research for this show, I just thought about the fact that we don't really hear from sex workers in the media. And people probably have very strong opinions about this, but maybe they don't know much about sex workers. And I think this quote from activist and former sex worker Lola Davina in the Huffington Post says a lot. She says, "There's a bright red line in the feminist movement. On one side, there are feminists who acknowledge sex work as actual work. The other side includes women horrified by the idea of receiving money in exchange for sex, who believe that to engage in sex work is to uphold patriarchy and rape culture." So can we start off with you, Kiara? Just talk a little bit about sex work and why, let's talk specifically about women, why women become sex workers.
Well, many different, it varies with each person.
Right.
It's individual, but mostly it's when they're adults who make a agreement with another adult, be it male, female, whoever, and it's their right. I'm just saying it's their right. It's what they do, and it's in the privacy of each other, and it's what they do. Now, some people go into sex work for different reasons. I personally went into it because it was my interest. It was also because I wanted to know more about sexuality and human nature and the different things that went on in my mind that was deemed not right. I come from a very religious background, as far as my mother's a reverend, and that wasn't cool. I started with dancing and modeling and a little bit of porn, and then gradually I went into sex work, and that's after I had my son, and I wanted to spend more time with him. I didn't want to go to another job. I did a waitress job and all this other stuff. I tried, and I did not have the freedom. And the financial gain is wonderful. And it's up to the person to see how you're treated, like in any other part of life. If you allow yourself to be treated a certain way, you will be treated that way. Mm-hmm. So I don't have horror stories to tell you. I've been treated with respect as I treat my clients with respect.
Yeah.
But there's many reasons. Now, if you want to go into how they say that prostitution and drugs and so forth, there's one thing I want the listeners to understand. Now, when you speak of prostitution and drug addiction and so forth, you're talking about something completely different. Furthermore, when that person began to do the drugs, it wasn't prostitution that brought them to do the drugs. It was some other part of their person or whatever was troubling them or whatever they're numbing out or whatever the recreation turned into addiction that led them to go to prostitution to get the money for their drugs. So perhaps you need to get to the root of that problem. The other problem is that there is poverty,
mm-hmm.
and that's poverty all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's this thing on FISA where heads of states and people in authority are protected through immunity. And you know what happens with that immunity? These human beings, who are still human beings regardless of their head of stateness or their authority, they take advantage of this. They take money out of schools. They take money out of the whole economy of their own countries and so forth to live this amazing lifestyle. And what happens? People go into poverty. Then comes some criminal and he tells you, well, you know, you can be a secretary or you can be this or you can be that if you come with me. People go under false pretenses looking for a better way of life, and that's how they get trafficked. But there's not just sex trafficking. There's also agricultural trafficking, organ trafficking. There's nanny trafficking, you know, housekeeper trafficking. You have to hit this whole trafficking thing where it's trafficked, not just blame it on the sex trafficking.
And we'll talk specifically about the law in just a couple of minutes. That is Kiara Rose, a sex worker, writer, environmental activist, a political activist. We're also joined by Tony Newman, executive director of St. James Infirmary, a peer-based health clinic run by and for sex workers, the only one in the country, and it's located here in San Francisco. Tony, as Kiara said, there's so many different reasons. But when you speak with someone who doesn't understand sex worker or understand the issue around sex workers, maybe hasn't heard from a sex worker before other than what they hear in the media, what do you tell them?
Well, I speak from a personal story. 20 years ago, I was a street prostitute out of necessity. I couldn't get a job. I was in the process of transitioning. I'd been a professional, had a degree from Wake Forest University, graduate work. After 100 interviews, no one gave me a job. So I'm saying that most trans women of color, it is not by choice. They are doing it for survival. That's what I did it for survival, just to make money. I had no other income and no other way to pay for food, housing, clothes, transitioning, unless I prostituted. And then I went on from there to become an escort and a mistress, which was more comfortable. But it still was survival for me.
Mm.
And that's the reality. Some choose it, some do not, but it's their right to do so.
Mm.
If they're over 18,
right.
It's their right to make an agreement with another individual who wants to pay for those services, whatever those services are. That's their right.
What would you say are some of the biggest misconceptions about sex work?
That sex workers are alcoholics and drug addicts. That is true to some extent. 50% of the ladies 20 years ago on 14th Street in New York were drug addicts, were alcoholics. There's a lot of pain. There's a lot of other stuff going on internally. That's something they had to deal with. But that's not the case in my case. Two of the ladies I work with, one is a judge now, and another one is an assistant district attorney in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So we worked together for 7 years. We were not drug addicts. We were not alcoholics. We were just making money to pay for graduate school, law school, and a PhD.
We're also joined today by Carol Lee. Carol Lee has been a sex worker activist since the late 70s when she coined the term sex work. She sits on the Sex Work and Trafficking Policy Impact Committee of the San Francisco Mayor's Anti-Trafficking Task Force. What would you add, Carol, to this very general question about why people become sex workers?
Well, there's so much diversity that I would not even begin to guess. Certainly, as your other guests have mentioned, there's a continuum, actually, between choice and force. And I think just the idea of a choice is sort of a misnomer. I mean, does one choose to work at McDonald's? I mean, in general, does one choose to work? So often, you know, sex workers held higher standards, and that one must 100% choose, as if one was... But this should also be compared to other kinds of work where one doesn't necessarily, quote-unquote, choose. So it's really a continuum, and I think that's very important for people to understand.
And what about misconceptions?
Well, I think people need to see diversity. There's also... It's very important to look at the relationship between sex work and poverty, and to understand that people who are vulnerable are often people who run away from home. Homeless youth, for instance, can be involved in sex trades when they don't necessarily want to, just as a means to survive. I mean, of course, all kinds of other people are involved in a means to survive. But perhaps people... I think what I see through the media is a polarization of the image of the kind of fancy call girl and then an image of someone who's in an abject situation. And I think the reality is the wide, wide range of people in between.
And, Carol, since you do work with the San Francisco Mayor's Anti-Trafficking Task Force, talk about what this looks like politically. The Huffington Post had an interesting story about how most Democrats do not take sex workers' rights seriously. This piece pointed out that 98 senators voted for this bill in the name of fighting sex trafficking, including people like Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren. The reporters contacted a number of progressive groups to talk to them about these issues. None of the progressive groups bothered to get back to them. In fact, the only group that publicly stands and defends the rights of sex workers is the Young Democratic Socialists of America. So can you talk about how this plays out politically?
Well, on the other hand, Amnesty International just came out for decriminalization, as did Human Rights Watch. Barbara Lee lobbied and voted against the legislation. So, you know, then on one hand, historically, progressive movements, I'm going back to the turn of the century, led the charge against prostitution and sex work. So, and in the left, we actually, from a socialist perspective, there was an anti-sex work movement historically. So I think generally it's this is the morality of our society that's slowly changing. I mean, at some point it was also, there were vast phobias against people who are LGBT, and that's dissipating somewhere. So I think that there are very old prejudices against sex workers. I mean, it's in the Bible, so that's something that will take some time to unravel. Mm-hmm. I know I'm very nervous when I see there's bipartisan legislation, because I know that the targets, when the legislators are trying to get together and prove they can do something, the targets are either sex workers or something around drugs. And I'm, you know, it just makes me very nervous. I think society is afraid of sex, not educated about the mm-hmm. diversity of situations, and are quick to jump on an anti-sex bandwagon.
Tony, what would you add?
I agree with her. I agree with her 100%. I think people are just misinformed. I think this legislation, they're just out of a lack of education. Mm. And as you say, you did not know much until this.
I really didn't.
About sex work.
Not the intricacies
and
at all.
This has really opened the door so we can educate and enlighten. Mm. And for that, I'm glad. Mm. So that we can bring it out of the darkness and speak about it on radio. Mm. I'm speaking again tomorrow with other legislators in order to try to get this thing worked out where we can decriminalize sex work, where you're not getting arrested for sex work. Governor Brown just signed AB 2243 yesterday, saying if you're a sex worker and you're working as a sex worker and you have been violated, raped or whatever, you can come to the police and they won't charge you with rape. I mean, with prostitution. If you've been raped, assaulted, you have a pimp, you're trying to get away from that, they will ignore that to take that serious. And that just got passed yesterday at about 3:30.
Huh.
We're the first state to do it. So this is opening the doors, I believe, for us to have a candid, open conversation about sex workers past and present, poverty, race, gender, so that we all can learn from one another.
Because sex workers have been arrested in the past.
By huge numbers, right?
Yes. And just saying, I met with the police captain from the Mission, the only district in San Francisco still arresting with a high number of prostitution is the Mission. The other captains are saying, we just don't bother with it. That's the only captain. And he's saying, I'm only going after the pimps. We don't want to arrest prostitutes, which is a step forward. It's not a law, but it's a step forward. And this law to help them if they're being attacked and beaten. You know, go to the police and they won't arrest you for prostitution. It's a step forward.
Kiara, how significant is this legislation?
Well, to me, it's significant because, you know, there's a lot of women that haven't come out and they, like you said, you know, and I told Laura, they support their families. They're putting people through school. And this is really affecting them. They don't have a means. I'm a person that's out. So, therefore, it's not hurting me as much because I have websites and so forth and so on that I'm out and there. But some people can't show their face because they work at another job or something. And so, therefore, there you go. You're taking away from these kids. You're taking away from children. You also are separating families because in some cases, like mine, CPS will come in and take your kids because you're not a fit parent. Because you're a sex worker, and you have, you know, as a sex worker, you have no right to have children, and that is the focus of the courts and so forth. I've gone through it. I know. I've seen. You know, I've been talked to at by judges and so forth, where I had to also correct them and be, you know, I am a human person here in front of you. You know, you can speak to me with respect because I don't. I'm sorry. I don't. If you have authority, please show me that you are better than me. Do not berate me or feel the need to berate me because you don't understand something. My main thing is that people need to come to peace with sexuality and sex because that is really the problem. People are against even themselves sexually. They don't understand their sexuality because sex is either dealt in a clinical way or in... Or not really dealt at all. Either it's clinical or it's a little bit disrespectful, violent. When it's not in its full understanding where it's a beautiful biological thing. Sex is not the problem. It's the mindset behind the sex. Sex is a biological... It's biological, very much like any other type of biology we have. And it should not be looked at as dirty because that is what we stem from. This is how we are created. That needs to be erased. And then you're going to have a better understanding and then you will have less people who are trafficked not willing to come out because that stigma is off of them.
Kiara Rose is a sex worker, a writer, and a political activist and an environmental activist. We're also joined today by Carol Lee. Carol has been a sex worker activist since the late 70s when she coined the term sex work. Carol sits on the Sex Work and Trafficking Policy Impact Committee of the San Francisco Mayor's Anti-Trafficking Task Force. Tony Newman is executive director of St. James Infirmary, a health clinic run by and for sex workers, the only one of its kind in the country. And it's located in San Francisco. Tony is a former sex worker and author of I Rise, The Transformation of Tony Newman. And if you'd like to join us, if you have any questions for our guest today, you know, the reality is we don't really hear much from sex workers in the media. So if you have any questions for our guests, we'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions or if you want to know more about this bill, Stop Enabling Sex Trafficking Act. It was signed into law in April, and a number of senators, politicians said that they backed this law because it would deal with trafficking, but sex workers say it's actually pushing sex workers back onto the streets where they are vulnerable, and it's forcing trafficking victims into the shadows. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. If you are a sex worker or know someone in the business, if you know victims of trafficking, how do you think this law will affect them? And what would regulations look like that protect sex workers and trafficking victims? You can email your call at kalw.org or head over to KALW's Facebook page, click on the video, and join the conversation there. We have an email from Lisa. Why does the left turn to free choice individualistic language around sex work? Is it right to sell your body? Would we say that we all have the right to work in unhealthy factories if we wanted to? Sex workers need safety. However, to say it's simply an individual choice is to say that women or people of color choose to be poor. The language around sex work has become so twisted because of the demonizing of prostitution. However, to simply say sex work is a choice and not a result of patriarchy is to lose all politics. What are your thoughts on that? Who'd like to take that one?
Okay.
Well,
Carol.
Okay. I just want to step out and just say, oh, well, of course I agree, but there's all kinds of, I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of sex workers and there's thousands of activists, and these issues are so complicated, and finding the right discourse is a long-term process. It's a new movement. I think we're developing a discourse, and I just would say that supporters need to support our movement and help in any ways they can to basically inform broader communities about these issues. I understand just what this person is saying.
Okay. I'm not sure if I understood well, but from what I did understand, I'd like to point out that sex work has been a part of our natural God-given, how would I put it, our physical. When you see, okay, let me set an example, since I'm not, the words aren't coming right. All right. Okay, so when you see people who are drifters and so forth, vagabond or whoever, and they're standing on the corner and they're male, are they not selling a physical part of themselves? They are selling their strength. And this is what's biologically theirs. And no one says anything about that. But then when a woman's standing on a corner, nobody's going to stop and say, I need you to move my refrigerator. Because that is her biology and that is part of her power. It's her sexuality. Do you understand what I'm saying? So while it is kind of male, it's also female. It's an empowerment of yourself through your sexuality, because women are always driven away from their sexuality, whereas men are always, that's their main source of manlyhood, their big Tarzan, pumping their chest over their sexuality. But even their sexuality, it's misinterpreted, because they want a sexy woman. What did they say? A whore in bed and a lady on the street?
Right.
So you're just contradicting yourself.
Would you like to address that, Tony?
I just want to say this is a new movement. I participated in my first sex worker rally in Oakland a week ago that I've ever been to, with hundreds of sex workers protesting against this bill. We walked to the Oakland mayor's office. Mm-hmm. It was maybe 200 to 300 people. They are forming all over the country. So this is a new movement with new dialects. It's going to take time. Everybody's coming from a different perspective and a different point. And I respect all those points. But it's new. And it's going to take time to form a dialect in this movement, because that's the first march. at the age of 55 that I've ever seen or been to. They're marching all over the country.
Yay. Well, Lisa, thank you for the email. I'll get to the second part of your question in the second half of the show. Today, we are talking about why sex workers are protesting a bill that holds online platforms liable for content related to, quote, the prostitution of another person. The Stop Enabling Sex Trafficking Act was passed overwhelmingly in the Senate, 98 senators, and it was signed into law in April. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it is our media roundtable. We'll discuss coverage of Donald Trump's meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. And then we will also talk about the thousands of children being kept in immigrant detention centers. Yesterday, a small group of journalists went inside a former Walmart that is now a shelter for detained children in Brownsville, Texas, and we'll speak with one of those journalists to find out what he saw. Today, we are talking about sex workers who are protesting a bill that holds online platforms liable for content related to the prostitution of another person. And we're joined today by Carol Lee. Carol has been a sex worker activist since the late 70s when she coined the term sex work. She sits on the Sex Work and Trafficking Policy Impact Committee of the San Francisco Mayor's Anti-Trafficking Task Force. Kiara Rose is a sex worker, writer, political and environmental activist. Tony Newman is executive director of St. James Infirmary, a health clinic run by and for sex workers, the only one in the country located in San Francisco. Tony is a former sex worker and author of I Rise, The Transformation of Tony Newman. Tony, during the break, you said that the rally that you went to in Oakland was very empowering for you.
Yes. I mean, I was a sex worker for many years. I've never seen so many sex workers in one place, out in the daytime, open, not on a street corner, not hustling, rallying. That was my first rally that I've ever been to with 200 to 300 sex workers marching to the Capitol of the mayor's office in Oakland. I'm 55 years old. I've never seen so many sex workers that are performing all over the country. So even though they've passed this bill has united sex workers, both past and present, and we're coming out the closet. I'm not ashamed to say that's how I got my start, that's how I made my move, and this is where I am today. So I'm not ashamed to say that I was an escort, a mistress, and a street prostitute. I'm not on drugs, I'm not an alcoholic. It got me to where I needed to go. I'm living what I think is my authentic life. And there we go.
Can I just interject? Can I just say that whether or not a person is on drugs or whatever, everyone has a some people, you know, like drugs and alcohol are one way, you know, are less acceptable. With some people have lying, some people do other stuff that need 12-step
I agree
program.
With that. I only say that because most of the people I speak to say, well, what kind of addictions did you have? I spoke to two people this week sitting at a dinner. They're very wealthy white Democrats, and they said, did you overcome, what kind of substance abuse did you have? And I said, I've never had a substance abuse. I bring that up because that's the conversation I'm hearing, that were you a drug addict? Right. Were you an alcoholic? There are some, but a lot of us were not, are not, and we chose to do this for whatever reason we chose. It's our right to choose to do this if we want to do it. That was my point, because those are the perspectives I'm seeing down in San Francisco when I'm talking to politicians. They just have that concept that we're all drug addicts and we're all alcoholics, and that's why we're doing this. Oh, we have a pimp. I never had a pimp. I never did drugs. I'm not an alcoholic, and I'm just saying that's not the case in my situation. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I think you make a good point, because maybe the one sex worker that we see featured on CNN, for example, had that past.
Yes.
And they frame it as she overcame this, and this is what happened.
Right.
Let's talk about this law, the Stop Enabling Sex Trafficking Act. It is now on the books. It was signed in April. 98 senators voted for it. Over in the House, that version, only 25 voted against it. So what this does is open websites to civil litigation if the site has content related to the, quote, prostitution of another person. And it applies retroactively. So posts made by users to a website in the past that can still be found could open that website up to lawsuits. Is that a good overall?
That is the law.
That's yes. a good explainer?
Yeah. Definitely.
Okay, so as a result, some websites like Craigslist and Reddit have already shut down forums and deleted pages that discuss sex work. Did you see changes immediately?
Before, when it was like it was about to be signed or whatever, when it was still in litigation, like Erotic Review and so forth posted this big thing saying when the United States chooses to change their policies, then we'll come back. But from now on, we're just going to, you know, we're not doing this. But I'd like to make a point. When let's say a criminal goes to a phone book, right? He looks through it and picks out a business or a person's address or phone number and decides that they want to go rob this place or do whatever criminal action it is. Are we going to shut down the whole phone book? Are we going to open up the phone book to litigation? Because basically that's what all these sites are phone books. They're basically just, you know, a directory. I don't see how you can hold one individual's or several individuals' actions and hold it against them. That's retro. That's not this is like a what do you call that when they used to do with the witches in Salem?
Burning. I can't think of the word.
When the priest would come and
exorcist.
Exorcist, listen to me.
It took me, I'm like, okay, what
is a witch hunt?
Well, yeah, let's just call it an inquisition.
Okay.
That's what this is more a witch hunt than it is for some person to move their political, their own personal agenda, because this is someone's personal agenda that's been created into something larger.
I just want to say that we're finding our mobile unit goes out on Tuesday nights and the weekends. We're finding double the numbers of young women on the streets. Mm. We're providing medical care, STD, HIV testing. We give them a care package. We give them our number. Our clinics are open on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. We're seeing numbers pick up. We're seeing more young women on the streets. Mm-hmm. This is forcing more young women to be involved with a pimp, because the pimps on the street is taking a lot of power mm-hmm. of being advertising for yourself in the privacy of your home. Mm-hmm. Now you're on the street encountering pimps, more activity, the chance for violence, the chance for seeing a bad date. Mm-hmm. All of that is now out there.
And that has almost doubled since this law.
What we've seen at St. James and our outreach unit from 10 p.m. to 2 in the morning, we're seeing the corners of young women filled who are working streets, being
true.
Street prostitution.
On East 14th, oh my goodness, it's ridiculous.
It's doubled.
It has doubled.
Yeah.
And, it has doubled. And then the other thing I wanted to point out is that socially and the neighborhoods and people in those neighborhoods should not be looking down on the women who are out there on the street. They should be asking their politician, the people they voted in, why now they can't go out into the street and so forth, because there's so much sex work out there and sex trafficking, because that's, you know, some of these girls are really, really young.
Mm. Now, I spoke, as I said, with the police captains just this week of Mission and Tenderloin. You a homeowner, that's your home, you shouldn't be confronted with pimps out in front of your door. Mm. I understand that. I understand that completely. Owning a home, I don't want to walk out with my children mm-hmm. at 4 or 5 in the morning and be encountered with this. Mm. So I understand the conflict that, listen, we're going to meetings with the associations of saying, listen, I'm not against you folk, but I don't want you to prostitute in front of my house when the pimps are yelling, hitting the girls. Mm-hmm. I'm calling the police. I feel uncomfortable. There's loud noises. They're working my children. And that fact, it's not right. Mm. I understand that, and I sympathize with the homeowners who are having that problem on CAP and the Mission. And we're going to associations to address that, because that is a problem as a homeowner and you have a child. I don't want my nieces and nephews to be approached, to be bothered on their way to school. So I get that. Mm-hmm. I just want to make that clear. Mm-hmm. I understand both sides of that gate.
Carol, what changes have you seen as a result of this law, and what are you hearing from other people across the country?
Well, you know, I mean, I've been extremely disturbed at hearing reports of people attempting suicide, considering suicide. In the community, it seems, is very scared, very worried, and I do see people talking about being on the streets, and what I'm really most concerned about also is that then come the next set of laws that make it tougher to be on the streets, that make it easier to arrest women under the guise of supposedly helping them. So this just escalates the legislative attacks against the sex workers who are now forced out onto the streets because of this federal legislation. And it's just an endless cycle. And I mean, I think what I've seen, studies around trafficking issues, most of the trafficking is in other labor contexts, and yet they keep hitting at prostitution. And most of the vulnerability for young people is actually a result of transphobia and homophobia, where young people are forced to leave their homes because they're not because their parents reject them. Then they're out on the streets, and those people are in that body of trafficking statistics. And I mean, sometimes I think it would better serve people who are trafficked to have ads on TV about supporting your gay children, your transgender children. Mm-hmm. I think that would eliminate a lot of the situation where people are out and having unwanted sex and surviving by sex trade. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the reality of the statistics, it doesn't match the legislation.
Well, and you all brought up a lot of points here. Let's specifically talk about the importance of having access to these websites, or in your case, Kiara, having your own website. This is something that I just learned. The New Yorker has a story about this, and it cites a study from Baylor University and West Virginia University, and that it found from 2002 to 2010, when Craigslist erotic service site was active, the female homicide rate fell by 17%. Can you talk about why having these websites and an online platform is so much better than having to go out onto the streets?
Anonymity, for one. You go ahead.
Well, listen, when I was a street prostitute, of course I had to fight a couple of Johns who wanted to rob me and so forth and so on. When I started running ads on the internet, I became more selective. We became more selective. Our pricing changed. It just gave us a better control of providing our services. We got to say, no, we don't do that. Thank you for calling. We were in charge of what we were doing. Mm-hmm. So we got a better clientele. We were more selective. It gives you a little bit more safety because you're more safe in who you want to invite in your home. You're getting in a car off the street. They could drive just about anywhere. Mm-hmm. How are you going to jump out the car? Mm-hmm. The control level has been decreased by going on these streets. Mm-hmm. You're making a deal. You're leaning in a car. They could drive you to the river and throw you in the water mm-hmm. at 2 in the morning.
As it has been done and mm-hmm. continues
so
to be
So when
done.
You have your own place, you're in control, you can then decide, I don't want to see this individual. It gives you more power. They've taken the control and power away from the sex worker in the name of human trafficking and sex trafficking.
Yeah.
And there's a big difference.
There is.
Be clear about that.
Absolutely, there is a huge difference, and I think you understand now it's a huge difference. How many people out there go to work every day at something they don't like simply for the means of survival? I don't see it to be any different. And when people come at me with the whole religion thing about not using your body for money, to get money, every day that everyone goes to work, as far as I know, in the anatomy, the mouth, the vagina, the penis, the anus are all parts of your body, as are your hands and your mind and your brain and your eyes and your nose. Everybody uses all parts of their bodies in return for money. So we need to get off that.
Let's talk a little bit about the human trafficking element of this. The Freedom Network, an organization dedicated to supporting victims of human trafficking, sent a letter to Congress cautioning them about passing this legislation. They wrote, "Responsible website administrators can and do provide important data and information to support criminal investigations. Reforming the CDA to include the threat of civil litigation could deter responsible website administrators from trying to identify and report trafficking." Carol, in your experience on the Task Force Against Trafficking and in your research on the Trafficking Policy Project, What are your thoughts about how these kinds of takedowns specifically affect victims of trafficking?
Well, basically, these kinds of takedowns and the raids and the restrictions really just force the business in general underground. So those people who are in situations, and we're talking about situations of abuse in general, and not necessarily the most extreme only, which are called trafficking, but there's all kinds of situations of various kinds of coerced labor and wage theft. I mean, it's really a broad range of situations that are of concern in sex work industries as in other industries. And to then have the industry pushed underground so that the only contact the various sex workers have with the public is through a third party is very dangerous. It makes it much more dangerous for individuals in the field. And I'm not saying that third parties are inherently problematic, because of course, you know, we have the right to work in a context where someone else owns the business and we're employees. I mean, as a sex worker, I definitely did not actually prefer working for myself. I did prefer working in an agency or a larger establishment. So we do need to have that option, but these exploitative situations are something that it makes it harder to address this kind of exploitation.
That's why they need to separate. That's why they need to separate it. You can't put us all in one bundle. That's not correct. You cannot put us all in one bundle. You need to separate what's trafficking from that. And like we all have said, there's all kinds of forms of trafficking. You need to address all trafficking, not just put it on sex work.
The other part of Lisa's question, who wrote in earlier, said there's a group called Missy, for example. Can you talk about the number of young girls forced into sex work so when they're 18 they don't really have a choice simply because they've reached the age of consent?
Well, I mean, again,
I have no knowledge
that
of that, so I have no comment to that.
Me neither.
I don't have any data to provide, so I can't answer that.
Carol?
I think of course, addressing issues for that population is extremely important. And unfortunately, there isn't there aren't enough beds, for instance, in shelters for people who are in that situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's not enough funding for efficient resources for these populations. Of course, these are issues, and there needs to be more support for people who want alternatives. Of course, finding alternatives to such an income in San Francisco and supporting yourself, or even in the East Bay, it's just almost out of the question. It's a very, very complicated economic situation we're in right now. Mm-hmm. And the idea of repressing people who have no other option except for sex work, that is the worst solution, so that they are, you know, they may wind up in jail, these things are just not solutions. So solutions do involve more resources, addressing structural issues and poverty and racism and transphobia.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about this. What would regulations look like that protect both sex workers and trafficking victims? Tony? What changes would you like to see?
I would like to see decriminalization of sex work.
Education.
And some education around that, to say it's no different to choosing to go work at Walmart if that's your choice. So I think decriminalization of the law for sex work would be ideal in my scenario. In my world.
Yeah, because it's more a morality issue than it is a law. And morality is, it's also a very extended thing. You know, there's not just one morality. There's all sorts of morality. And it is the business of the adults, the consenting adults. You can't not tell a person how and what and how they like sex. It is a biological necessity, as is eating.
Yeah.
As is going to the bathroom.
I would say taking out the criminalization of sex work would be ideal, in my opinion, to making it legal with guidelines and rules and so forth and so on, where you're not threatened for arrest. Mm. I think would be a wonderful spot to come to get sex work and to divide that line between sex trafficking and sex work.
You need to fully understand what trafficking is and understand what adult consent is.
Carol?
And the Freedom Network also supports decriminalization, and I think, as you mentioned, this is the only organization of service providers to people who are to trafficked persons in the United States. Of course, you know, the Global Commission on HIV and the Law, Amnesty International, and Human Rights Watch, it just goes on in terms of all the organizations that support this legislative change to address trafficking issues. The Global Alliance for Trafficked Women. So I think that, you know, the anti-trafficking movement is divided, but the rights-based anti-trafficking movement, it also a progressive movement, supports decriminalization and looks towards that as one of the most important solutions. But I think sex worker involvement in dealing with cases of abuse and exploitation is essential, too. The sex in India, for instance, sex workers are part of the community. They look for underage people, and they provide resources, and they work towards support for people who are also in abusive and physically abusive situations. So, of course, it's very natural that sex workers should have a lead role in dealing with abuse in their own communities. Mm-hmm.
The San Francisco Weekly had a story about trafficking, and San Francisco Assistant DA Frank Karuba said that, together with New York, San Francisco is probably one of the largest hubs for human trafficking in the United States. How do you think decriminalizing sex work would then affect human trafficking?
It would open up more people to be able to report crimes, for one. And on the other hand, too, there would be more resources available, counseling. There would be more counseling resources. And I think within the sex worker movement and the sex workers themselves, we could create a safe haven for those who are trafficked.
Tony, anything to add?
No.
Carol?
Yeah, well, I think that one of the main benefits is, I think, you know, I definitely second what Kiara said, and I think that one of the benefits is that we will then be able to offer more support and regulation and be integrated with the community so that we can weed out the conditions of abuse. And I'm not just talking about quote-unquote trafficking, but I'm really talking about the wide range of abuses. I think that, you know, these statistics, if you look at nationwide, most big cities have been called one of the major hubs of trafficking. So that's sort of a sensationalist kind of label that cities use to encourage this kind of fervor around anti-trafficking legislation. But I mean, not that there aren't these situations, but, you know, all homeless youth may be included in these statistics. And again, dealing with issues for homeless youth really does involve structural attacks on poverty and on racism and on homophobia and transphobia.
Also, can I add just a little bit about the directories and so forth? You know, we have we had a lot of forums in the different directories, and it helps not just the sex worker, but also the client, because, you know, there's people that go under the guise of sex work and go rob people and so forth, and then you would be able to report such things.
I want to ask you where you think this is going from here. Senator Kamala Harris, when she worked in California as Attorney General, she worked to get Backpage.com to shut down. Are you familiar with Backpage? Mm-hmm. Well, how would you describe it?
Backpage?
I know several people who put ads on Backpage.
I used to put ads on Backpage.
For sex work. Mm-hmm. It was a form of advertising such as Arrows, Craigslist, Backpage, and several other sites. It was a site that you could put an ad on, massage, whatever the case may be.
And Backpage shut down before this law passed.
Correct.
They were shut down by the FBI, the U.S. Postal Marshal, and everybody else under this.
Katie Simon writes about sex work, and she wrote that two workers have been assaulted at gunpoint since the closure of Backpage, and we're seeing so many more people on the streets. She writes, I can't even count how many stories of rape and assault I've heard from people returning to or just learning the streets for the very first time. One person has already taken their life because of this legislation. So where do you see this going?
Well, if they treat it with in a civilized, intelligent manner, not based on morality and not based on religion, based on the realities of life and how people in general live life, they'll be able to come up with better solutions for what's going on. Again, I'm going to keep on stressing on poverty. That is the problem. Immigration is not the problem. It's poverty. It is a system that protects people in positions of authority who rob their countries or their people blind, and these people go in search of a better life. And if you need to address it, it's like having a garden. You have this beautiful garden and the weeds keep popping up. If you do not kill the root of the problem, you're going to have that problem forever.
Carol, final thoughts from you, about a minute left.
I forgot.
Where do you see this going next?
I think that there will be I think that this is more subject to a constitutional challenge in the court. I know the ACLU is working on that, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, so on all sorts of fronts. Remember, they did try to revise the Communications Decency Act, so they are limiting communication amongst all adults, as we see the personals closed. So this, in order to regulate sex work, which does have a huge element of privacy, they do have to step on the rights of people in general. And I think to get into this private space and use this cultural approach, I think that it really limits everyone's rights. So I think that hopefully that will be successful.
And Tony, final thoughts from you, about 30 seconds.
I would like to see this law repealed, but it's going to have to go to court. It is a law now, so that's the reality of it. It's going to have to be a court battle, and we'll see what comes of it.
Tony Newman is executive director of St. James Infirmary, a health clinic run by and for sex workers, the only one in the country. It's located here in San Francisco. Kiara Rose is a sex worker and human rights activist. Carol Lee has been a sex worker activist since the late 70s. She sits on the Sex Work and Trafficking Policy Impact Committee of the San Francisco Mayor's Anti-Trafficking Task Force. Carol, Kiara, and Tony, thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Okay. Your Call is produced here at KALW in San Francisco. If you'd like to listen to our past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Laura Wenis for producing today's show, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Mm-hmm.